Thank you very much for being here today. My name is Ellen Roussel. I'm the program manager here at CMHA Ontario for the Living Life to the Full program. You are being in the webinar, Being Alone Together, the Social Pandemic of Loneliness with Dr. Nazreen Khatri, just in case you thought you'd be somewhere else this morning. Before we go any further, I just want to let you know that this will be recorded, and we will be putting all this session recording on our website at some point. You will also receive all the links after this session. So, Dr. Khatri will answer as many questions as possible today. And before we go any further, I would like to first talk to you a bit more about CMHA Ontario. Mostly CMHA Ontario is works in a broad manner to ensure that the mental health lens is embedded across sectors at policy, health system, and program level. And we're using also social determinants of health framework. Our network of 28 local branches and communities across the province provide us a strong capacity to mobilize local partners. We manage several programs at CMHA Ontario that support over 30,000 people yearly, such as our Youth Campus Mental Health Program, our Talk Today program, which is a comprehensive mental health awareness initiative for amateur young athlete sports in Canada. And we do have two cognitive behavior therapy principles flagship program, Bonds Back and Living Life to the Full, which are accessible both at individual and community level. Your host program this morning is Living Life to the Full. And we've been adapting Living Life to the Full for different needs in different population. So far we've been reaching youth, caregivers, people living on the autism spectrum, older adults, seniors, post-secondary students with our program. We also have worked very closely with several ethnocultural groups and language groups, and we've developed cultural and language adaptations as well. The program is now available in English, French, Cantonese, and Mandarin, and as of this year in 2020, it will be available in Tamil. So we keep adding a new language every year almost in our program. So that's it for mostly your host's organization and what we do. Without any further delay, I will introduce you to Dr. Khatri. I want to speak to you about Dr. Khatri first before I go through her bio. First, from the work she has done with Living Life to the Full. We know that Living Life to the Full is an evidence-based program because it is based on cognitive behavior therapy principles. But one thing that we didn't know is that how is it impactful really on our participants? And Dr. Khatri has been a key person to really help us understanding a bit more the kind of way our program is impactful. And she has been our key researcher, our principal researcher on this program for the last almost 7 years now. So we're really grateful to have such an amazing researcher with us at Living Life to the Full. And we're also happy to feature her in this webinar series for the next month. So without further delay, I will introduce you to Dr. Khatri. She's a registered clinical psychologist, gerontologist, neuroscientist, and educator with over 15 years of professional experience. Dr. Khatri completed her clinical internship and CIHR-funded postdoctorate at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. From 2004 to 2012, she led the Mood and Related Disorder Clinic and founded the Cognitive Behavior Therapy Service at Baycrest Health Science. Since 2012, at the Rotman Research Institute, Baycrest and University of Toronto, she has studied the neural link between midlife depression and the development of dementia. She innovates treatments for depression, anxiety, for older adults, including CBT, mindfulness, and exercise. Dr. Khatri's research has been funded continuously since 2006 and has been published in peer-reviewed academic journals and book chapters. Dr. Khatri has completed over 400 presentations, served as mental health advisors for Bell, Let's Talk, Girls E-Mentorship, Women's Brain Health Initiative, the Jane Goodall Foundation, and has been cited by CBC, CTV, The Globe and Mail, The Wall Street Journal, and 20 other media outlets. In 2013, she was awarded the Woman of Baycrest Innovators in Research Award, and in 2016, the Government of Ontario Leading Woman Building Community Award for her enormous impact of her work as a psychologist and gerontologist at Baycrest. She is also a proud McGill alumni and current vice chair of the McGill Women's Leadership and Philanthropy Committee. So without further delay, I will pass the microphone to Dr. Khatri for her presentation today.
Thank you, Ellen, for that very nice introduction. Hello, everybody. It's a real pleasure and honor to be here with you this morning. I'm going to spend a bit of time talking about the idea of loneliness and how that impacts our physical health and our mental health. And then after that, we're going to open it up for questions and answers. And I think that's the most important part, because this is just the beginning of a conversation that we want to have about loneliness and really opening that up and discussing it. And so, as a clinical psychologist and neuroscientist, I'm often asked about loneliness. What is it? Who is lonely? Is being lonely actually bad for your health? And if so, why? What can we do about it? Now more than ever, while observing social distancing due to COVID-19, it's essential to learn the facts and adaptive coping regarding loneliness. So what is loneliness? Loneliness is an emotion like any other emotion, and has often been called social pain. It's the feeling you get when distressed or anxious due to a perceived lack of connection with others when you want or need it. It actually has three aspects: the structural, so the presence or absence of others; the functional, so what relationships do, whether the relationship is a spousal relationship, a sibling relationship, they have different functions; and then the quality, whether it's a positive or negative relationship for you. So in other words, to stave off loneliness, we have to have relationships that are structural, that is, they actually exist. They have to fulfill an appropriate role, and they have to be mostly positive. So who is lonely? Everyone feels lonely sometimes. It is a mostly healthy response to an unmet need. It is the mind and body's way of signaling that we need to seek out social connection and company. However, when loneliness happens often or becomes chronic, it can have a negative impact on physical, cognitive, and emotional health. So I'll be talking about all of those things in turn. Currently, research shows that loneliness is increasing to unprecedented levels. Compared to 30 years ago, loneliness rates have doubled in North America. According to the American Association of Retired People, ARP, 40% of adults over the age of 45 years old report loneliness. Although we often associate loneliness with older adults, one of the loneliest groups in society is actually 15 to 30-year-olds. 70% of university and college freshmen say that they experience loneliness. So why is loneliness on the rise? We have increasing rates of living alone. So one out of three individuals in Canada now lives alone. It's the most popular type of household structure. Later marriage and childbearing, or not having children altogether or not being married, moving away from family and friends for education and careers, and aspects of technology and social media are just some of the factors that can lead to loneliness. And of course, at the moment, the self-isolation that's coming with the pandemic. And so having to be isolated in this way will increase loneliness because it kind of has a physiological impact on us. So in other words, there are psychological aspects of quarantine that make us feel lonely. So in an evolutionary sense, we like to be part of the herd. So human beings exist best in kinships or in family structures. And so even though we are safe in our homes, whether we're alone or with family members, we still feel anxious, hypervigilant, lonely. Those are some of the psychological impacts of self-isolation. So people don't sleep as well, or they have different kinds of dreams. And one of the reasons people don't sleep as well is because, in evolutionary terms, if you were separated from your community, you might be in danger. That's kind of how it was, though we are not today. And so that primal part of the brain gets activated when we're in quarantine or self-isolation, and we kind of sleep with one eye open, if you know what I mean. The idea that we're not completely comfortable or relaxed. So why is loneliness unhealthy? So loneliness works in two ways to undermine health. On a biological level, humans are social by nature. Social isolation related to loneliness increases cortisol, or our stress hormone. Chronically raised levels of cortisol or stress hormone can be damaging to physical, emotional, and cognitive health, including increasing rates of heart disease, anxiety, depression, and even dementia. In fact, cigarette smoking can be as bad for your health, loneliness can be as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and can increase the risk of death by 50%. Second, being around others lowers our stress hormones. It gives us social support, meaning, and fun, and helps us cope in healthy ways. Isolation can lead to more unhealthy ways of coping, for example, overeating, drinking, smoking, that can damage our health directly. Let's talk a little bit about loneliness at work. Loneliness in the workplace is pervasive. Loneliness at work can increase absenteeism, meaning not actually showing up to work, and presenteeism, where the person is at work, but they have a lack of engagement. And it can impair productivity, performance, creativity, reasoning, and decision-making. Modern workplace factors, such as working longer hours, blurred lines between work and personal life, especially now, as many individuals are working from home during the COVID-19 outbreak, and working remotely and changing jobs frequently, all add to a feeling of loneliness in employees. But the good news is that there are many active steps that we can take to tackle loneliness. So I'd like to go through some of these tips, and then I'm going to turn it over to the question and answer period, where we can really start a conversation about how we're feeling about this experience that we're having right now, because everybody feels lonelier during the pandemic, and what we can do about it. So the first tip is to just become aware and name that you feel lonely. Studies show that writing down your thoughts and feelings and trying to discover the gaps in your social experience leads to better mental health. Number two, gain perspective. Consider how our changing social structures enable loneliness. Due to things like later marriage, divorce, geographical moves for work and education, people often find themselves at loose ends socially many times in life. And especially now with the mandated social distancing, it is only natural to feel an increase in loneliness when we may be separated from family and friends. Be kind to yourself and know that there is nothing wrong with you. Three, become socially creative regarding COVID-19 related life changes. Being creative and learning new ways to work and connect with others is key. Set aside time to meet family and friends and coworkers through phone calls, Skype, FaceTime, email, texting, and even writing old-fashioned letters. It's the little things that count, sharing a joke, pictures, music. The next tip is making relationships a priority. There's no substitute for developing and sustaining ties, even if they are in bite-sized chunks. Think of a 10-minute conversation with a friend. Other ways to focus on socializing is by volunteering at a social distance or joining a personal interest group, for example, virtual game or book club. 5, prioritize sleep. Studies show that a good night's sleep makes us feel less lonely and better equipped to enjoy the day. One of the myths about aging is that sleep problems or sleep disruption is natural, that we all have worse sleep as we age, but nobody should put up with poor sleep. Everyone should be getting at least 7 hours to 9 hours of sleep every night and wake up refreshed most days. If you are not, it's a good idea to see your doctor. And the next tip is to make good use of me time. Just as it is essential to connect with others, it's important to spend time, sometimes alone, connecting with ourselves through nature, hobbies, or in mindfulness practice to feel comfortable and benefit from healthy solitude. During COVID-19, we can plan for how we would like our relationships to be once the pandemic is over. It is a time we can dream, think, and plan to optimize our relationships now and once the COVID-19 threat is over. Another tip is to practice relaxation. Even a few minutes a day of breathing exercises, light stretching, yoga, meditation, journaling, and other quiet activities calms the body and the mind. Exercise. Daily exercise, indoors or outdoors, improves physical, emotional, and mental health, including decreasing feelings of loneliness, improving mood, and improving memory. Enjoy nature. Research shows that we are healthier when we are close to nature. If you are unable to go outside, you may try a little gardening or buying plants, herbs, and flowers for your home. Lastly, it's important to cultivate gratitude. Taking stock and being grateful for the connections and relationships in our lives creates the confident, open mindset that makes new connections more likely to happen. Lastly, I just want to mention something about overall physical health and self-isolation. Don't be afraid to keep in touch with your healthcare team if you need. The healthcare system has had to adapt due to COVID-19, and many healthcare practitioners are still available by phone or through technology. Don't let mental, cognitive, or physical issues go unaddressed. Thank you so much for listening to the first part of this webinar. And now I'd like to turn it over to Helene and get started on the questions.
All right, so you can send me through the Zoom chat your questions. We have an interesting comment here from Lauren. Lauren says, these health outcomes for loneliness just heighten the cruelty of prisons and solitary confinement. Not that this is the only problem with prisons. So that's a comment from Lauren. I'm not sure if you you want to add something to this, or?
Sure. I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Can you repeat?
Yes, she says these health outcomes for loneliness just heighten the cruelty of prisons and solitary confinement.
Right, right.
Not that this is the only problem in prison.
Right, right. So that's an important point, that in fact, loneliness is so bad for us, and it's so painful for us that we actually use it to punish people. So one of the things that we do, which is kind of the greatest punishment we can think of, is solitary confinement. And so I would agree that this is something that definitely makes things very difficult for people in prison.
All right, so we have Veronica here who says, have you studied the link between the decreased quality of connection theory, and social media? Kim Barthel has done some amazing work about connection.
I'm not aware of that work specifically, but we know that when it comes to social media, social media is technology, it's a tool, it's neutral, it's neither good nor bad, but it's important to use social technology in kind of smaller bite-sized chunks and make sure that it doesn't crowd out real life connections or meeting in person. Right now, obviously that's a challenge, but in general. So social media can make us lonelier if we just look at status updates and compare our own inner emotional state to somebody else's cultivated, edited, objective, status updates, but it can make us less lonely if we use it to connect in person at a future time, or we use it for meaningful exchanges. So, really talking about how we are feeling, things that are important to us, sharing music, jokes, literature, poetry, those kinds of things.
I'm waiting for some comments or questions from the group right now. So while you are sending that my way, I'd like to maybe ask you a question, Nazrin.
Yes.
I'd like to hear you about the whole idea of being lonely in a crowd or even within a group. Many people do have social connection, but they remain very deeply lonely. What's going on here? What's the dynamic that creates such a state?
Right. And so the idea that people can be lonely in a crowd, because it's that they need the emotional connection. And so that has different aspects, but one of them is trust. So feeling that you can trust the people around you and that they trust you. So trust has a lot to do with community and with relationships. And so does things like whether that relationship or the people around you are a positive influence. So studies show that if you have an ambivalent feeling or kind of a mixed feeling, sort of like that these people are frenemies as opposed to fully friends, that can be very stressful for people and better than no relationship with that person at all. So it's important to have a sense of trust, a sense of acceptance that you're not being judged by somebody in your life. And the other thing we have to kind of keep in mind, as I was saying in my talk earlier, is that it's kind of like a social landscape we're in. So loneliness actually isn't mentioned in the literature up until about 100 years ago, because most of the time people were living in family groups to survive. I mean, everybody had a role to make the household run, and they had to do that for economic reasons. So one of the things that prosperity has brought, especially in the Western world, is more isolation. So one of the kind of perks, it's not really a perk, but one of the outcomes of prosperity has been loneliness, because what people generally do when they get the chance is to buy an independent home, if they have more money, to buy a bigger home, to live in gated communities, and it kind of goes on and on. And so that's kind of one of the ways that we define success. Does that make sense, Helen?
Absolutely, absolutely. You just brought up a lot of consideration with that phenomena. We see it a lot, actually. I've got lots of new questions for you. All right. Do you have any suggestion for at-home caregivers who are truly alone but definitely are at risk of social isolation? We've worked on this quite a lot together, Nazrin.
Yes, we have.
It is something that can be a very challenging situation with caregivers.
Yeah, it's very important, because there's only three kinds of people in the world: people who are caregivers, people who were caregivers, or people who are going to become caregivers. So we definitely need to shine a light, advocate for caregivers, be open about how difficult it is. And I just want you to know that you're not alone, that though caregiving can be very meaningful, it can be rewarding, It can also be exhausting, frustrating, isolating, difficult economically, and in many other ways. And so I think it's important to reach out, whether it's to the CMHA, to the Ontario's Caregiver Association, and find the resources that can support you, even if it's just for a few minutes here and there to begin with. It is really important. Self-care is not selfish, it's selfless, because we are all together in this, and we need to care for one another, but we also need to care for ourselves. So I think it's really important, but I also think it's important to acknowledge the loneliness that can sometimes come with caregiving, and to know that you're not the only one experiencing that. Every caregiver I've met has mentioned that at one point or another.
Absolutely. And if I can add from the work we have done with Living Life to the Full with caregivers, these truly appreciated our 8-week program that was not only helping them with various aspects of anxiety and low mood and all this, but also for them it was sort of their going out with friends type of time of the week. And I think it's really the one step at a time. Every small little building block is important when you're at risk of social isolation.
That's a wonderful point, Helen. And so every little bit counts.
With Absolutely. Exercise,
with socializing, with taking care of your physical health, your emotional health, your spiritual health. Anything we can do. We sometimes feel that if we're not doing something to a very high level, then we're somehow failing. But I think it's important. I talked about gratitude, in terms of feeling less lonely. But I think it's equally important to lower our expectations during the pandemic. We are all struggling in different ways, more anxious than we were. And so we should not feel alone in that experience, having to learn to work in a different way or to work remotely. In pre-pandemic times, we would all be in the same room together. Ellen and I would be with you, and we'd be talking and meeting and things. And so we've all had to adjust. And so for part of that, we need to be kind to ourselves and not hold ourselves to such a high bar all the time. And so anything we can do to lower our isolation or feelings of loneliness is important to do now.
I've got I have a lot more of new questions here, and some of them are really interesting. Andrea is asking us, for people with social anxiety, how do you recommend that they overcome their feelings of loneliness, since they are more likely to be so much more impacted?
Yeah, that's so important. I think when people have social anxiety, which simply means that they try to avoid social situations, even though they would like to have relationships, because they feel so nervous for one reason or another, I think it's good to seek support and help for that, because we have excellent treatments like cognitive behavior therapy that really help people overcome that. But I also think it's important to be kind to yourself, to acknowledge that you have social anxiety, and to do what you can do, even with seeking treatment on your own, in terms of trying to have the interaction that you can tolerate. So whether it's emails or short phone calls or sending a text, sometimes technology can be a help that way.
Okay, so I've got a few questions around teenagers, younger people. Let's see here. Given that you said about 15, 30 years old people being the largest demographic impacted by loneliness, yeah, what do you see for their future? Do you predict that loneliness will increase or is increasing for new generation? And somebody else, just so that I can give you everything at once, and then you'll... any suggestion for teenagers who are missing the social connection in person with friends during this pandemic?
Right. I think I'll take the second question first.
Okay.
So there's a lot of concern for adolescents and young adults about missing milestones. So whether they're missing graduations, missing celebrations, vacations, camps, school. So depending on how old they are, so from children all the way to young adults. And I think that it's important to let people be sad. I think it's uncomfortable for us as parents or grandparents or family members to, you know, we don't ever want to see our loved ones in pain. But I think it's important to support people and have open conversations with young people about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and help them to problem solve the situation. One way is to give them a bit of perspective and let them know that they're not alone. So people who are missing graduations now will still get a chance to meet with that group at another time. So sometimes as a teenager, it's hard to see into the future because they don't have the life experience, but it's important to reassure, you know, these young people that they will have there will be a time when this will be over and they will be able to meet in person with their friends, with their group, to have a celebration at that time. I also think it's important not to put, so there's three kind of main points. One is to let people let off steam, to be sad or angry or frustrated or have a sense of loss, and let them be open about their emotions. The second one is to reassure them that there will be a time when everyone will be able to meet in person again. And then the third one is to help them to do things now that help social connection. So whether they're going to celebrate something virtually and have kind of a Zoom party, or whether they're going to celebrate with the family that they live with. So I think it's not an all or none situation. People need to kind of adapt and get some of the joy that they would have from celebrating any event. And I think it's important to encourage young people to exercise, to be in nature, and to continue to take care of themselves in terms of their physical and emotional health. And lastly, I think it's important to do things that help them plan for the post-pandemic period, meaning getting jobs, getting internships, going to university. So trying to find out what they can and stay connected virtually in terms of those things, to not completely let go of those plans and dreams.
All right. Are you ready for the next question?
Yes, I am.
Yes, good. Okay.
Did that answer the question, do you think?
I think I'm not sure if you answered the first part of it, which...
Oh, sorry. Can you repeat that then?
Which was, given what you said about 30 years old people being the largest demographic impacted by loneliness, what do you see for their future? Do you predict that loneliness will increase or increasing for new generation?
Yeah, I think that loneliness is definitely increasing, and it is increasing by generation. So that's something we know. I think that there's a few different factors about why that's happening. I think one reason is the reason why it's increasing for everyone. So the things I was talking about in my presentation. But I think specifically with young people, this is the first generation to grow up with social media, which is a different way of mediating relationships. It's less spontaneous. It's less, I don't want to say it's less real, but you know, about 80% of human communication is nonverbal. So you don't really get that. You don't learn those social skills in the same way if you're not in person with the people. I'm not talking about in the pandemic, but I mean in general, through your upbringing. So it's important, I think, going forward, you know, in the post-pandemic time, for young people to be encouraged to see each other in person. I think that's important. And I also think that there's more pressure, mostly economic pressure, which means that this is the generation, each generation is growing up with more scheduling, with more activities, with more competition to get into university, to get jobs, and to do different things. And so that crowds out time for unstructured, spontaneous socializing. So I think that's what's going on. But on the other hand, what's the solution? I think we, since we know these things, we need to work around them and make sure that the young people in our lives are connected to other young people.
Oh God, we have amazing questions right now. So I'm going to be a bit...
Does that answer the question, Ellen?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Whoever asked the question, maybe you can send me a little chat here and ask for clarification if it's necessary, but I'll move on to another question for now, okay?
Okay.
And I'm a bit biased here, that's why I'm taking this question. Okay. Is there any research that supports pets providing a panacea for loneliness? Is there any research that supports pets providing a panacea for loneliness?
Absolutely. Yes, sorry. Yes. So studies show that having a dog, apparently, makes people less lonely. But the interesting thing is that it also helps you meet people. Because if you need to walk your dog, this is kind of a conduit for meeting other people, dog owners or non-dog owners, and also helps people with social anxiety because they are not just sort of having to talk to people out of the blue. There's sort of something to talk about in some way to connect. So having a dog lowers your blood pressure, helps you to live longer, helps you to be physically and mentally healthy. And it's, you know, the pets in our lives also benefit from our love and caring of them, of course. And so it's a wonderful, and it's a way to be in nature. There's just so many things that come out of that. And I think you know that personally, Ellen.
Absolutely. My pet have saved my life a few times, I would say. But to me, I think I would add to what you're saying when it comes to pet, and probably parents would say that as well when it comes to their children. It really creates or force you to go into some kinds of schedule in your day. You don't have the choice. You need to go out for the pee-pee and the poo-poo of the pet, and you need to walk the pet. So there's some kinds of regimen that you have every day with a pet that no matter how low mood you are, how much anxiety you feel that day, you have to do it.
That's right.
And that helps so much to really... bring you out there a bit more in moments of difficulties.
Right. It gives you structure, it gives you meaning, and it also gives you a sense of feeling needed, which we all need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's somebody here that are asking, what are your thoughts on people that don't want to connect virtually through some type of video chat because it makes them feel more depressed and lonely?
Right. Well, we all interact differently. And so for some people, it's better to get a letter, to get a phone call, or something else. So I think it's important to be open. So we need to kind of use our creativity and ask ourselves and each other what's going to be comfortable and what's going to work.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, it depends of everyone, right? Everyone is sort of looking at this with their own needs, really.
Right.
One person here is saying, I'm interested in some suggestions for combating the lack of connection, which occur when relationships happen virtually. Example, no physical touch, difficult to see body language, inability to have prolonged quiet time with another human when it's done virtually.
Right. So, I mean, these are the things that we kind of need to work around. So some of it is just really acceptance. So again, kind of lowering expectations and acknowledging that it isn't as fulfilling to see someone virtually as it is to see them in person. But I think in terms of the other aspects of touch and those things, we can kind of go out in nature. And again, having a pet, you know, touching the, you know, flowers, grass, trees, having a garden. Those things are also very therapeutic, but also very sort of healing and helpful.
I've got a good one for you here, a very hard to answer, I think. At what point should we place mental well-being ahead of the risk associated with the transmission of COVID-19?
Right, and so we have to, as countries, as cities, communities, families, weigh risk of loneliness in a way, or mental well-being, health, and physical well-being. So I think it's kind of like on a hierarchy. So we need to be physically safe first, because we need to survive. We need to get through this without becoming ill. And then within that scope, we do whatever we can that's healthy and adaptive to optimize our experience during that time. So, you know, it can be anything from a new hobby to cooking to music to, you know, it can be a lot of different things that need to kind of help round our experiences out during this time. But even though it's difficult, we do need to remain physically safe to the best of our research knowledge, you know, whatever that tells us.
All right. I've got another question here. What are the physical side effects of loneliness? And give me a minute here in another chat. She says, the reason why I'm asking this is because I support seniors, and when you ask them, they all say they're fine. So I start to ask about their physical health, especially through the pandemic. So she's really trying to see the relationship between loneliness and physical symptoms. Someone who takes care of a senior, can she see some physical symptoms that would make her indicate that they may be very lonely?
Right. Unless it's very extreme, it's usually just expressed through their behavior. So being downcast, being withdrawn, not being in good spirits. So the kinds of things, so loneliness does over the long haul impact physical health, both morbidity, so illness, and mortality, meaning death. But we don't want to wait until, you know, somebody's health suffers, physical health suffers because of loneliness. I think another way to find out if somebody is lonely is to ask them about their relationships. You know, who are the people that they enjoy seeing? How often do they connect with people or talk to people or see them virtually? And so I think that's a gentle, kind way to get a sense of what are the supports that are in place for someone.
Okay, so I've got a Tim Horton coffee shop question here.
Okay.
We know very well that there's lots happening in those Tim Horton, Starbucks, Second Cup. There's like a whole life happening in those coffee shop culture. Yeah. And the person here says, I really miss going to a coffee shop, going to Tim Horton, Starbucks, Second Cup, and going to a coffee shop, sitting, relaxing, having fun, and enjoying my time with my family. Some people just like to go alone, read their newspaper. There's all kinds of ways why we want to be surrounded by people in a coffee shop and feeling like somehow we're part of something. So during the pandemic, is there any other healthy hobby we can do to compensate what the coffee shop culture bring to us? And how do we replace it, this necessary need?
Right. I think one thing that we can do, and you know, we need to be grateful that it's summer, is to be outdoors in a safe way. and take your coffee outdoors, or if you're with your family, you can take a walk or sit outside, because people are, you know, if you're in a park and still social distancing, you know, you'll see other people around and animals and birds and, you know, take in fresh air and be in nature. So I think that kind of outdoor activity has to be, is maybe one way of having that cafe feeling a little bit.
Absolutely, and I'm telling you now, some of you are outside Toronto, but probably in your community, you've got a lot of dog off-leash area. Just go in those areas if you like animals and you don't have any at home. This is a really great way to meet people through the connection of a kind dog, or people don't walk really, they're cats, but these are places you can hang around for a while, even if you don't have a dog.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
I've seen many, so that's why I'm saying that. Okay, so a lot of people say they love the coffee shop question, so...
it's a great question.
What else? I don't see any new questions really. So last call, I think, on the questions. We still have about 3-4 minutes. Anyone wants to send me some new questions here or new comment or... Oh, somebody's saying community gardens are nice too. The sense of community that comes from taking care of a garden together. That's absolutely right. I suppose I'm not sure if you want to add more, Nazarene, regarding it's starting. This is something that really happened during the pandemic, right? The gardening trend here. Everybody's starting gardening, everything for some reason, and cooking, also lots of cooking together.
That's right. So I think that these are really healthy, fun, wonderful activities. And I think that the key word there is community. So we need each other the most right now. And it may feel that we're not able to see each other, be with each other, but we are, as the title of this webinar is, that we are feeling alone, but we're really together. And so I think we need to take heart, be grateful for what we have. And this is a time that will deepen us, I think. And we can really reflect and reset in terms of our relationships, prioritizing our relationships. And when we come out of this, you know, building even healthier and stronger communities because of gardening, cooking, and just because of that cafe culture feeling. So I just want to wish everybody well.
We still have three amazing questions, and maybe we're going to finalize our get-together today with these three questions, if you don't mind. Knowing that we have three more meeting together, if you want to register, there's still lots of room. So the first one is, what do you recommend for people who feel they don't have the best social skills?
Social skills are actually something we can learn. And so what I will do is I will make that part of the summary, and I'll send out some resources in terms of how people can learn social skills.
So you're saying you're going to be putting it in the summary?
In the summary. I think that's something that would be nice. It's nice to have as a resource.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Now, what about the fear of sharing with others, as trust is often broken? How can we manage being lonely due to confidentiality?
Right. And so the key thing with community and relationships and breaking loneliness is to actually trust people. So I think one way to look at it is, you know, if there's something you want to share with someone, you know, choose the person you trust the most first and share with them. And then I think it helps you build confidence and helps you build trust in the ability to trust others.
And the last questions for today, at what point, and it's a great question really, at what point should you seek professional help for loneliness?
Right. So if you feel that it's really impacting your ability to function, and that you find that your mood is slipping, that you're having trouble sleeping, that you're feeling anxious, and you're just not feeling like yourself, it's a great idea to reach out and talk to someone. So a friend, a family member, a mentor, someone in your faith community, a mental health professional, a doctor. But if it's getting to the point where it's impacting your daily functioning, I would go and see your doctor and get that checkup from the neck up.
Oh, good. Okay, so I'll see this at the end because it's going to be good comments for the recording here. Thank you so much for those clues about being lonely in a crowd. I am finding that people behind their mask don't feel the need to be polite or civil, even at times. It's amazing how sensitivity to nonverbal communication is amplified at this time. Sometimes this can make you feel that your environment is hostile. Any advice beyond trying to be kind within these type of situation? It is an isolating experience in itself.
That's right. And so I think it's important for us to do what we can. So one of the main reasons we wear masks is to keep other people safe. So what I do is I just try to have a kind attitude and smile and do the things I would do, even though I'm wearing a mask, because it's better for me. And I find that I'm more able to be resilient when I go out, because I know what you mean, that it brings a kind of anonymity to wear a mask. And then just like online, sometimes people don't hold their manners. And so I think it's important for all of us just to keep in mind that there's somebody behind that mask, and just to be as kind as we can. And if somebody else is not sort of responding in that way, that it's not to take it personally, because it is a very kind of difficult and different time that we're going through right now. But the kinder we can be to one another, the better it's going to become.
And I will leave you with this. Let's all learn to smile with our eyes.
Wonderful.
So thank you so much, Nazrin, for today's session. Again, we will have Nazrin again for 3 sessions. Please register for them if you haven't. It's going to be on other type of topics related to youth, seniors, the pandemic and the post-pandemic situation and so on. So thank you very much, everyone, for being with us today. And I wish you the best for everything, and see you next time.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So informative.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for the feedback.
Informative, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much as well.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Thank you so much.